Hi, this is Zoe, and this is episode 43 of the Zoe Routh Leadership Podcast, and today we're talking about managing up, dealing with barriers to success, and sometimes that's your boss or somebody who's got authority over you. So let's get this thing done.
Welcome to the Zoe Routh Leadership Podcast, your source of strategies and insights to make you a better leader. Influence, improve, inspire.
Hey, welcome. I'm in Parramatta this week with tremendous views to Sydney, out to the Harbour Bridge, and then to the west, out to the Blue Mountains and the river. It's actually quite an extraordinary view that we've got in this beautiful apartment. So I'm really enjoying my stay here. Rob's got a case with his work, and I am enjoying the flexibility that my lifestyle and my work allows me to work from Parramatta. And one thing I love about this venue is it just suits my key principle that big views give big insights. There's something about newness and novelty that allows new connections. So my ideas have been sparking all over the place. Speaking of which, new ideas and new experiences and big views, we've got the leadership retreat happening in Tasmania, November 2 to 5. I'm really excited about this. It's going to be an intimate gathering of eight leaders plus moi, and we are going to spend 4 days in an extraordinary location with beautiful background, and we're going to do a little bit of activity each day, so either a little bit of bushwalking or a little bit of sea kayaking to get us grounded in who we are and where we are so that we can do the big picture thinking that we need to do to prepare for 2018. We're going to be looking at our leadership edge. So where is our thinking getting in our way and how can we expand that? We're going to be looking at our personal edge. Where do we get tripped up and trapped, and how can we break through to start to perform at very high levels so we can set the routines up for the energy that we need to execute on the plans that matter most. Plus, we'll make sure that we have the plans that matter most in place. Would love to have you join me. You can go to my website, zoerouth.com. I'll just bring up the URL. It's zoerouth.com/leadership-retreat, and all the details are there. So that's later on in November. Very exciting. Yay. The other announcement that I've got, there's two more actually. One is a little preview. In the end of September, we're going to be launching Centered Leadership, Lead with Grit and Grace. And this is going to be an accessible program delivered via video with some access one-on-one to me and live access to me. So it's an accessible way for people to get coaching and support from me that isn't having to sign up for my bigger program. So if you're looking to get support and have wondered how you could get on board, this program is going to help you. I'm really thrilled about that too. I'm thrilled about everything, folks. And the third thing, which we're going to announce pretty soon in 2 weeks, is our 2018 Edge of Leadership Unconference. And we've listened to the feedback and we shook things up for this coming unconference. We've changed locations so that we have an extraordinary view for the day and we can be in and outside at the same time. Not at the same time, that's sort of, it's a bit quantum, but we can go in and out, and it's just a beautiful location, and we can get to the heart of what matters when it comes to employee engagement and employee experience. That's sort of the theme. So you heard it here first. We're going to be announcing it very shortly through my newsletter list. And if you're not on that list, you should be on that list because you get access to my weekly kick-ass leadership articles that come out each week. The podcast links are in there, and all the great events that I'm running are all listed there, so you don't want to miss anything. And you just go to my website, zoerouth.com, click on freebies, and Bob's your uncle. You can get in that way. So a really cool book landed in front of me on Thursday, and that is Oscar Ciamboli's new book called Deep Listening. You can also buy this with a little deck of cards that can help you practice deep listening. And I'm really excited to read this book because Oscar is just a stickler for quality, and he has gone deep, deep, deep into this whole skill of listening. And I know that it's going to be a quality production, and the cards look beautiful, and it's just a deeply reflective tool which will help us all be better listeners. And if there's any skill we need as leaders, listening is definitely one of them. And I'm going to be interviewing Oscar a little bit later in September about his new book. So stay tuned for the future episodes interviewing with Oscar, who's just a lovely, lovely person, and not to mention awesome thinker. So that's pretty exciting. Stuff I'm pondering lately. I love this idea of boundless leadership. The idea that we can bust through barriers and go to the edge of the earth and beyond. That sounds like a cartoon character. What was it? Was it Buzz Lightyear? It says, anyway, somebody will tell me what Buzz Lightyear said, but I think he says infinity and beyond. That's what he says, infinity and beyond. And I like this idea as leadership being boundless, that we have moved past all the barriers that keep us from succeeding. And when it comes to boundless leadership, I really believe there's two aspects to that. There's how we manage our center. So how we show up as stable, anchored, stoic, centered, really, and how we can use that to explore our edges. Because I think if we wander to the edges of our experience and to the edges of our skill without our core being stable, we just get lost. So I think boundless leadership is about having a strong core so that we can explore the edges. And so in looking at this idea of beyond borders, it made me think about managing up. And I've been listening to different clients and some of the blocks that they feel they have in their world. One of them was a client in the audience at a speaking engagement I did. And she was an executive assistant. And she said, I have this problem with my boss. So the speech I gave was on influence and networking. And she said the problem with her boss was that she has this task that is banking up and taking forever. And what she needs for him to do is just go through the pile of papers that she's put on his desk and say, keep, throw out, keep, throw out, keep, throw out. And he just keeps not doing it. He just says, no, don't have time for this. She's frustrated because this is a stumbling block for her to tidy up the office and get things classified, organized, etc. And she was tearing her hair out. So her question was, how can I get him to do this thing? And my answer was, well, you don't. You don't start with trying to get him to do something he doesn't want to do. It starts with a very, very different place. And that's sort of my solution or my approach to dealing with managing up, whether you're an executive assistant or somebody who has a manager or a leader above them or CEO who reports to the board. It's not about how do I get them to do what I want them to do. That's not the starting point. You need to have an understanding of where you want to go, of course, and what the end outcome is. But you don't start with how do I get them to change their behavior. You start with awareness. So we're going to go through a little bit today my strategies for developing the capacity to influence and build a rapport with somebody so you can get the outcome that you want. I had this other example. So they had the EA trying to change your boss's behavior. Another typical scenario is somebody who wants something from somebody else who has authority over them. In this case, I was working with a CEO and they wanted to get the organization to sign off on the professional development plan. I.e. they wanted to come and do my Leader's Edge Mastermind. And they were putting this to the board, or specifically the chair who represents the board. And it was this stumbling block, you know, it's like, I just have to get it through the chair. I have to convince the chair that this is a good thing. And I think this happens whether it's CEO to chair or whether it's somebody who wants to get a promotion or a pay rise or an opportunity out of their boss. That can be a huge stumbling block as well. So a lot of the problems I see in both these scenarios where you're trying to get somebody to do something that you want them to do and they don't want to do, or if you're making a request for yourself, there's some things that we gets in our way. One, we can see people as a blocker. So how we relate to that person who we see as a barrier to getting what we want, we see them as something that needs to be gotten over, gotten through, gone around. And this can be quite a significant thing because our experience with them might be true that they are a blocker. They just say no. Computer says no. Manager says no. And that could be our common experience. And any time we want to address something or progress something, we get a no, no, no. So this can be a significant objection and perception. Another thing is that we may have a tendency to be scared to ask for something for ourselves. Speaking up for ourselves can be incredibly intimidating. And I think to myself, why is that? Why are we scared to ask for something for ourselves? And I think in Australia, there's a number of different obstacles to that. And here's a few. So asking for something from somebody else, particularly if they have authority over us, it can really be hurtful if they reject us, because rejection is painful. It's like, oh, but I had the courage to ask, and then they said no, and I feel deflated by that. I feel like I'm not worthy. Another stumbling block in Australia is this fear of the tall poppy syndrome, the fear of putting our hand up, saying, I deserve this, I'm elevating myself, and that we'll be slashed down for thinking above our station or reaching beyond our station. And it's a real chronic problem here in Australia. People who do rise above others tend to get criticized and have rocks thrown at them, and incites jealousy and all sorts of perverse behavior. I haven't seen this necessarily in other countries, but it's a common challenge and meme here in Australia. And here's another one, which I'm not sure if it's common elsewhere, but it's definitely common here, and that people are afraid to ask for something for themselves because they don't want to be seen as, and I quote in Australiana, up myself. Which I think is actually a hysterical expression. I don't want them to think I'm really up myself. It's just so graphic in its context, potentially. It's got bad visuals. What it means for all non-Australian listeners, it means that I don't want to be perceived as arrogant. Yeah, still hilarious expression. Okay, and these fears can keep us from speaking up and asking for what I want. So these are the internal ones that are going on. We've got the external ones, like our boss is a blocker, or they just dump stuff on our desk. And some people have that relationship with their manager, that things arrive, they just get constantly asked to do this, this, and this, and this, and that can be overwhelming. Sometimes their manager expects heaps as well. So they've got this attitude of, yep, it's your job, get it done. And because you always do, they keep dumping stuff on your desk. And that can be a chronic cycle of overwhelm as well. Or sometimes our manager isn't supportive. Like, they just don't look out for us. They don't check in on us, and so on. And we can get really deflated by that and stressed out by that. Or worse, they pay too much attention to us and they micromanage. Yeah. They dig in and they control our entire workflow. I was reading this interesting article about the statistics around micromanagement. I'm just going to pull it up for you. It's from the Chicago Tribune in 2016. Yep. And it's the article. I'll put a link to it in the show notes. And the show notes for today are zoerouth.com/podcast/ what am I calling this one? Managing Up. There you go. So the hyperlink at the end after podcast is Managing Up. And this article by the Chicago Tribune is called Study Finds Your Micromanaging Boss Could Be Killing You. Yeah, dramatic title. And the research, it's a study from Indiana University, Kelly School of Business, and they tracked 2,363 Wisconsin residents in their 60s over a 7-year period. So a fairly lengthy study. So people in their 60s over a 7-year period. And what the researchers found is that people in highly demanding jobs with little control over their workflow, i.e. they have a micromanaging boss, were, listen to this, 15.4% more likely to die during the study period compared with people in less demanding jobs. Mm-hmm. So, listen to the other statistic. Meanwhile, people in high-demand jobs who also had a high degree of control over their work lives, i.e. autonomy, had a 34% decrease in the likelihood of death compared with people in less demanding jobs. So it's interesting. They've equated micromanagement as increasing demand. So they've got control over workflow or lack of control over workflow, i.e. micromanagement, as the contributing factor. There you go. So it didn't talk about just workload, but it's like the pressure of having no control of that workload, which was the finding. So it could be true that your micromanaging boss could eventually kill you off. So that's no good, right? We need to address that. That's for sure. I guess apart from having a boss who might kill you through their micromanagement is that they don't listen. And that's, you know, coming back to Oscar's deep listening book, I think that's a pretty important one. You know, what if you actually don't bother listening to your people and you micromanage them? You're basically turning them into downcast slaves who are going to die early. So don't be that boss. The last one I find with, and people have mentioned this to me regularly in my workshops, is how do you deal with a boss who is just volatile? They're reactive all over the place. They explode. You never know where they're coming from, whether it's a good day or bad day. So these are all pretty intense situations and concerns. So how do we actually deal with that? Like, if our boss is a barrier, how can we be a boundless leader when we've got this animal as our supervisor or as our chairperson getting in our way? Well, first things first. And first things first is awareness. So the key to dealing with this is to have awareness. And there's two things that you need to have awareness around. One, yourself. And the classic tenet, know thyself, is applicable ad infinitum at any stage, in any situation. So knowing yourself is the key to getting anything constructive done. So knowing yourself is really important. And the other key aspect of awareness is knowing the other. Well, you might be saying, well, that's all very well and good, Zoe. How do I develop awareness? Well, I'm glad you asked, Nigel. I'm imagining you as Nigel. You could be Natalie. You could be Esmeralda, for all I know. However, you'd be asking, well, how do we develop awareness? I'm glad you asked, because I have a tool for that, and it's called an empathy map. And it's not, there's different kinds of empathy maps. This is the one that I use that's based on my volcano model, which I describe in both of my books, Composure and Moments. And the volcano model looks at what's below the surface and what's above the surface in terms of what we can observe. So let's start at the top of the volcano around the things that we can observe around people. So if you can imagine, just draw yourself a volcano and you're looking at what comes out of the volcano is the stuff that you can observe that's easy to identify. So when you're developing awareness, you can start with that place first. And you can do this for yourself and do this for your blocker, your bastard boss or CEO. Well, first of all, if we're going to do this well, we need to stop taking those adjectives to them. That's not helpful to our cause. So our boss or our CEO or our chairperson or the person who has authority over us, let's call them Romeo. See, already you feel more happy about them. So Romeo and ourselves. So we're going to look at the visible aspects of our volcano. And there's two things that we're going to look at. We're going to look at priorities and preferences. And I use the DISC model as a prompter for this because it's such an easy people reading tool and it just gets to the crux of a lot of issues straight away. So let's look at priorities. So on one side you can do yourself and on the other side you can have a look at Romeo's priorities. So in terms of priorities, there's generally two that fit. And do we have a priority around getting a task done? Or do we have a priority on relationships at work? So for us, when we're thinking about work context, what is the most important thing for us? Like when it comes to feeling workplace satisfaction, do we want to have a friendly workplace where we feel like we belong? Or do we prioritize having work that we can get done and feel like we're accomplishing? It's not one or the other because we basically have variations or degrees of both. However, if you had to pick one above the other, which would be a priority for you, task or people? And do that for Romeo. Knowing what you know about Romeo, do they have a priority of getting the job done or they have a priority around relationships and people engagement? And you can tell simply by just observing them. You know, do they come in and they get straight down to work or do they stop and check in at people with people at their desks? Clear indicator, generally. of A, either a skillful leader, or B, somebody who prioritizes people or task. All right, the next one is preferences. Oh, sorry, let me just clarify that one point. Somebody who is a skillful leader will always come in and check on the people around them first and then get on to task, regardless of what they find more interesting, task or people. So that's just a big leadership tip for you. All right, preferences. Preferences is around pace. How quickly or slowly do you like to work? Are you like hell for leather, let's get things done? Or do you prefer a slower pace so you can be methodical, so that you can assess the risks and maintain the status quo? So generally, in our preferences, we either like a fast pace or a slow pace. Which is it for you? Now, do the same thing for Romeo. Does Romeo like a fast pace or a slow pace? You can tell just by observing them. Do they flurry through things, or do they like to just, you know, be quiet and sequential and focus on quality and systems? Easy giveaway. So, okay. So in our empathy map, we now have priorities and preferences, which is at the top of the volcano, things that we can observe. Now we're going a little bit deeper. Mm-hmm, that's right. And the first thing we're going to look at is triggers. Triggers drive particular observable behavior. So somebody who might be volatile, or we observe them as volatile, has certain triggers that may be hidden below the surface of our volcano. So here are some change triggers, or some triggers that might be at play for you and or Romeo. And these are really important self-awareness tools, and it's based on the work primarily of neuroscientist David Rock and his wonderful books. I think one of his books is called The Brain at Work, and I think this is where the information comes from. And he identified contemporary triggers in the workplace that cause somebody to go into survival mode, into fight or flight. And when you know what these are for you, it means you can self-observe and self-manage better. Now, when you know what they are for your boss, it means that you can mitigate and manage the triggers as well. So you can know what's likely to trigger your boss into survival mode. And they might be a fighter or they might be a flighter, meaning they might be volatile volcanoes or they might just be shut down and retreat. When you know this about yourself and your boss, bam, you have opportunities you didn't have before. So instead of you hiding in a corner, you can actually do something about it. So onto the triggers. At the very base one is uncertainty. We are wired for certainty. Certainty makes us feel safe. When things go uncertain, we go, oh, don't know what this is going to mean for me. And we get panicky. We go into survival mode. So again, for each of these triggers, we have varying degrees of responses. Some of us are so used to a changeable world that one doesn't really bother us. However, for others, it's a big deal. What's it for you? What's it for Romeo? So uncertainty is the first one. Belongingness is the second one. And belongingness is that sense of tribe, of community, of being part of something. When that is threatened, that can put us into survival mode. So if you get left out of a party invitation and you feel devastated, likely this is one of your triggers. If you couldn't give a rat's, then likely not. It depends, right? But belongingness is how we feel safe socially. So it could be a trigger for you or Romeo. The next one is fairness. Fairness. And that's to do with our primal experience in the tribe as well. So if we were to survive well in a tribe, everybody knew their place and everybody got their fair share. So because if somebody hoarded resources, that put the rest of the tribe at risk. So fairness could be a trigger. Autonomy is another one. Autonomy is having the ability to make choices in our own workplace. So a micromanager who dictates our workflow takes away our autonomy. It doesn't give us control over what we're doing. So autonomy or loss of autonomy can be put us into survival mode. Another one is status. Status can be a big threat. You know, so if someone challenges your expertise or your knowledge or your place, that can put you into defensive land. And it might be for your boss also. That status is pretty important. That title of chair or CEO or manager is a significant thing. And if you bring an issue to them which undermines or challenges or avoids or dismisses that, that could put them on the defensive or on the offensive. So is that a trigger for you or for Romeo? Another one is overwork. Just having way too much work can put us into survival mode. Might be true for you, or you might be used to working with overwork, so that's no longer an issue, but it might be true for your boss too. Okay, so there, let me just repeat the possible triggers. So you're drawing this in your volcano, what possible triggers are for you and for Romeo. We have status, we have uncertainty, we have, I'm saying them out of order, sorry, let me just start over. That's the way that I said, belongingness, no, that's not the, okay, start over. From the bottom, most primal trigger is uncertainty, then it's belongingness, then it's fairness, then it's autonomy, then it's workload and overwork. I think that's all of them, right? Status, certainty, autonomy, belongingness, fairness, overwork. There you go. So any of those triggers for you or for the others. All right, now going deeper into the volcano, this is developing your awareness even more, is there and your beliefs. Your beliefs. These are really important things because we make decisions based on our beliefs. Now, how do you know which beliefs to pay attention to? For yourself, think about what you believe is important to you at work. So identify your core things that, you know, I believe a workplace should be fill in the blank. I believe a boss should be fill in the blank. Just start with those two. The workplace should be, make a description. My boss should be fill in the description. Now, do this for Romeo in their volcano map. What's important for Romeo? And you just pay attention to what they talk about. What's important for them about the workplace? What's important to them about their boss? Because likely they do have a boss too. Or if they're the top boss because of their chair and they don't have a boss over them, then it might be, what do they believe about being the boss? So this might be take a little bit more interrogation and observation because it may be a bit more subtle and not be so overt. And it's a pretty important one. The next layer down is all around values, because beliefs are built on values, and values are things that we hold as important. How do you know? For yourself, key indicators. Where do you spend your time and where do you spend your money? This will tell you what's important to you, what you value the most. So if I look at where I spend my time, I spend a lot of time reading. So learning is one of my key values. I spend a lot of time going on holidays and adventures. And adventure is one of my key values. So that's my time dispensation. And I also spend a lot of time in working on my health. So going to the gym and exercising and so on. So those are kind of my top three key values is adventure, learning, and health. And if you look at money, where do I spend my money? I spend on those things too. I spend a lot of money on health and getting my health right. I spend a lot of money on supporting my health regime. And I spend a lot of money on my education. And I spend a decent amount of money on my holidays and adventures too. So that's a really cool indicator to see what you really value. Now, thinking about Romeo, where do you see Romeo spending their time and money? Is it, what do they prioritize after work? Maybe you know, maybe you don't know, but you can find out. You can ask. You can be curious about that. And you don't necessarily have to hack into their bank account to see where they spend money. This is all about developing awareness and curiosity. All right. So we have now completed the volcano empathy map. And I, like I said, I'll have a handout for that on the website, the podcast page, which is zoerouth.com/podcast/managing-up. So you can download that and use it for yourself. So once we've done awareness, what happens next? By developing awareness of what's going on for you and for the other person, that generally leads into empathy. If it doesn't, then you need to do an empathy exercise. And an empathy exercise is simply imagining yourself in their shoes for a day. And if you have the opportunity to do an acting role for your boss, do it, because you will develop empathy immediately for the scope of their work and responsibilities that you may not have been aware of because you've just been immersed in your own job. So if you get to act in their role, it'll really, really, really help in terms of understanding where they're coming from. And if you can't have access to acting in their role, then follow them around if you can for a day, or at least in your own imagination, follow them around and try and get a sense of what it's like to actually live in their shoes and handle the responsibilities, the pressures, the priorities, and the preferences that they've got going on in their world. The next layer out is that from that place of empathy, you can move on to your connection skills. And there's three areas of connection, or three skills of connection, that you can develop. One of them is clarification. And so if you're trying to manage up, it's likely you need to clarify something that you need or require, clarify a behavior that doesn't work for you, and that means you need to give feedback and establish boundaries, or clarify what they mean in terms of their work assignment towards you. So clarification is actually an advanced communication skill, and it's pretty critical for you if you're going to influence your boss. The second one is negotiation. That's like, right, this is what I want. How can I bargain and work with you on this? That's an extensive skill in itself. And the third one is persuasion. This is where you really want to make the case for something, whether it's advocating for yourself or for an idea. And it's how do you actually put the case forward and build buy-in. And I recommend Simon Dowling's book, Work With Me, for that particular one, which is The Art of Building Buy-In. Whew. Okay. Well, we've gone through heaps. I hope you liked my empathy map of us and Romeo, and it will serve you in great stead when it comes to trying to manage up. Okay. It's the starting place, and that's where we begin absolutely everything. I would love to get your comments, and I would love to be in touch with you. And as I mentioned in the beginning, if you haven't gotten on to my newsletter yet, please do so. And I will be your fan forever. I will, actually. I love it when people sign up to my community. I really have a strong sense of responsibility for you in terms of producing really great quality content that helps you lead better and live better. So in the meantime, live well, lead well.